Whatever happens, when the world ends, I want you to know it's been a wild ride. Stevie, I love you, man.
I love you, too. Thanks for sharing that with me.
You're welcome.
I'm ready to go.
Can I get some love over here?
We love you, Malachi.
We love you, Malachi.
We love you, Malachi.
Greetings, all. This is Sound Mind, Stevie, Justin, with our guest, Malachi Arreta. Did I say it right? Arreta?
Yep, perfect. Okay. I'm impressed.
Yeah, thanks, man. I really appreciate it. Here we are.
Here we are, finally.
We're doing this. It's happening right now.
Yes.
Here to talk at you, with you, towards you.
Yes, and if you guys don't remember, this is Malachi. He was unable to come in a couple of weeks ago, but we got him now, and we forgive you 100%.
All transgressions.
True brothers in Christ, right here. You
know? Thanks, man. So...
Yeah.
Just for people who may not know who you are, what is it that you do?
So, I rap. I don't call it Christian rap because I don't like labels like that. I more see myself, and I actually got this from Lecrae from reading his book. This isn't original, but it's still how I feel. I make music, and I make music about me, authentic experiences and what I've been through. And because God is so prevalent in my life and Christ is so prevalent in my life, yes, that comes up like almost every time.
Yeah.
You know, so I see myself as less of a Christian rapper and more as a rapper who is Christian, or even better, a rapper who follows Christ.
Yeah. I get that completely. Yeah. So just for the sake of life and what's happening in this moment right now, when would you say it started? Like, if you could pinpoint a moment where it was like, okay, I'm going to do this, what was that moment?
So, honestly, it started way, way back because my dad was always listening to rap and just different hip-hop artists and secular and non-secular. But when it really started, like when I started rapping myself, because we'd always like sing along with the songs back on, it was all the way back when we had the CDs in the car.
Yeah.
We'd sing along with the songs, whatever, you know. Gangsta's Paradise, Coolio, that was a go-to growing up.
One, two, three, four, get your body on the floor. Do you know that one?
I don't. Maybe was, I do. That sounded kind of familiar.
That was his next album after Gangsta's Paradise.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that sounded kind of familiar, maybe. I don't know. I'd have been a kid, though.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. But, I was like 15, 16 when that came out.
Are you going for the deep cuts, Stevie?
The what?
The deep cuts? Or is that a pretty popular one?
That was one of his... That was like the last sing... I could be butchering this, but that was like his last major single before Coolio kind of fell off the map.
Yeah, now he's on like cooking shows. You seen that?
No.
Dude, that's... I need to look that up.
He's a chef. He's a good chef.
Wow.
Dude, I'm going to check that
reality
out.
TV.
Got to make money somehow.
Yeah.
Pay the bills.
Anyway, what were we saying?
Yeah, and just kind of, so it was always kind of there. But when I really started like rapping was actually in the sixth grade. My boy Cam, if you're listening to this, I love you, dog. my boy Cam, like, he would just beatbox. And I remember he was always showing off his beatboxing. And then one day I started rapping with it, you know. And it kind of was like, oh, cool, we got this thing going on, you know, just lunch tables back in sixth grade.
Yeah.
People would be like, you know, everyone's got the beat going.
Yeah.
Yep. And then, of course, like, it was like back in sixth grade, we were all shy. So, like, it was like the boys' table and the girls' table. And at the boys' table, me and Cam would start going at it. And one day I was like, hey, like, you've heard Dougie, right? Because, like, this was back in, like, 2010 when, like, that was, like, the biggest movement.
Yeah.
Still is. Throwback.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, that West Side flow. But
every dance has that song.
Seriously.
Yeah.
No, it was fresh. But he started beatboxing the beat from Teach Me How to Dougie. And I, of course, knew the whole song, every single lyric, every little guy, not just the Teach Me How to Dougie. I knew everything.
Yeah.
So I started spitting it, and everyone started coming over and listening. And that was kind of this cool thing we had going on. But the moment that really changed it was when the girls came over to the boys' table.
What?
It was like automatic desegregation,
breaking
like
the
huge
walls
moment,
down.
Breaking the walls right down.
Yeah,
and it was beautiful. and I liked the attention as a sixth grader. So
who wouldn't?
Yeah.
And did you recognize that that was a special thing happening when you were in sixth grade, or were you just like, oh, girls are kicking it over here?
It was a little bit of both. I mean, after that, I would start doing a lot of performances at church. I would always rap Lecrae songs, and my sister would sing, you know, if we had whatever going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, anyone who grew up in the church knows you're going to end up performing something in front of a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Whether you sing, you dance, whether you can't sing and can't dance, you're still going to sing and dance in front of everyone.
It's accurate, yeah.
Depending on your parents.
Yeah.
So I kind of kept doing that, and then me and Cam just had our thing. You know, I actually think that's how we became, like, super close over the years. It was just, like, always having that, like, artistic expression to go to and share with each other. And we would do it at the park. We would do it at, like, football games. And there would always be, like, a crowd coming around us. And they'd be like, oh, that's what's up. Freshman year, like, fast forward all the way. We went through middle school together. Freshman year, we were doing it. After wrestling practice one day while we were both waiting for a ride, because it was back when neither of us could drive. And this kid named Josh, Josh Borgia was his name. He actually committed suicide that same year. RIP Josh. He was a good friend. But I remember he was sitting there waiting with us, and he was the most positive person, like that I ever met. He was always in a good mood. Like, we were all shocked when it happened. And he was always so kind to everyone. And I remember he was telling us, he was like, wow, he's like, you're really good. And I was like, oh, thanks, man, you know, because people usually give compliments. But he was like, no, seriously, man, like, you should try to record. Like, you should try to, like, make something out of this, you know? And I was like, the first time I really thought about it, like, because I wasn't even writing my own stuff. I would just rap songs that already existed that I memorized.
Yeah.
And, like, I really started thinking about it there. And I don't know, he was just so enthusiastic about it that, it changed some of me, and it sparked some of me, so I started writing my own lyrics.
Wow.
And I didn't put anything out for a long time. I didn't have, like, recording studio or nothing. But then up to my sophomore year, my boy Mike, who, like, his thing was called Mikey Beats 23, and he had his SoundCloud, and he just made beats, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then he started releasing a couple songs. He wrote one about his mom, and I don't know, it, like, sparked something else in me. And I remember, like, sitting there thinking about, like, you remember what Josh said? Like, he said you can make it, you know? If he said that, like I believed it when he told me. So I started, like, thinking more, and I wrote a song. And I started writing more, and then me and Mike have been boys since way back in the day. Like, Mike used to come and beatbox sometimes with Cam. And then I told him, like, hey, man, like, can I make a song on one of these beats? Like, can we do something? And he was like, yeah, let's do it. And we made one song, and a bunch of our friends liked it. The next day we were at school, and all our friends were like, yo, guys, like, I see you, blah, blah, blah. And then from there, we made a group together. It was called True Form Music, or True Form Hip Hop. We kind of never decided. But it was just me and Mike. We put out a whole album my junior year. I used his studio to record, and he did all, like, the mixing and mastering, the producing. Because I had no idea how to do that. I was just...
So he had a little studio set up at his house?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he had, like, a really nice mic, nice program. So, like, pretty professional for just a 16-year-old.
You know?
I was impressed. And I would show up and throw my lyrics on, add my artistic advice. Back then, I didn't know how to write hooks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I couldn't find, like, a catchy tune.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about mixing and mastering and recording. None of it. I literally just knew bars.
Yeah.
That's all I knew was bars. So that's kind of, like, how it worked. And then, like, slowly developed a lot of skills of, like, more artistic and, like, more, like, completing songs. And I had more to offer every time.
Yeah.
Kind of got weird with me and Mike at one point, though. And we ended up, I'm not going to get into all of it, but we ended up splitting up as a group. And I was on my own for a while. And I was kind of just, like, bouncing around. Like, I had this one homie, Jermaine, who had his setup, you know. He didn't have as much money in his setup as Mike did. And Jermaine was a lot like me, you know. He knew more than I did about, like, the mixing and mastering and the technicalities, but he was pretty much more or less the same. Like, I just know bars, man, you know, like.
And I know how to push the button.
Yeah, Jermaine is super talented. And we did a few songs together. And then as far as when I showed up here with Stevie, is because Josh Knott.
Yeah.
Josh Knott was hitting me up, and we were always friends up at Ferris. And he was telling me, oh, yeah, like, come check it out. There's this guy, Stevie D. I told him about you. And he slid me the number. And then I called you one day because I had, like, a like a remix of Where Is the Love for Black Eyed Peas.
Mm.
And I wanted to, like, I actually, like, remixed it to apply to the Florida shooting and, like, current world affairs with, like, the division in our country with Trump and all that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I wanted to bring in a lot of artists, you know, diverse artists, you know, from all over town, different ages, different ethnicities, religions.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and it was really cool. And, like, I remember, like, thinking, I want this to be, like, really professional.
Mm-hmm.
So I came to Stevie with that. And then after that, like, after that was all said and done, we started talking about, like, other music, you know. And I guess, yeah, that's how I ended up here.
Yeah.
And, part of the team,
yeah.
Skytree Studios.
That's right.
I know what it is.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, Josh Knott, he started doing sound here at the church and just had an ear for it. So I started showing him some stuff. And then he started coming in the studio. And his good friend, Frank Sinclair, who will be on our podcast, I'm thinking like, oh, no, it's already set. I haven't told you yet, though.
Oh, cool.
But May the 10th.
Sweet.
We're having Frank. And so he came in here and did a project, and Josh was digging the studio piece. But that was when he first was like, oh, man, you got to check out my boy Malachi. Yeah. I'm like, have him reach out. Yeah.
Dope.
I think it took a while. It was like 6 months later or something.
Yeah, it took a long time.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's awesome, man. That's cool. You know, I feel like you know you're doing something that you're supposed to be doing when you start doing it and the doors just start opening for you. Like, all of a sudden some, you know, friend, he's like, oh, man, I got, you know, a workstation at home with, you know, a MIDI controller and I'm making beats and a microphone.
Yeah.
Let's put in work.
Yeah.
Or you're like, your friend just beatboxes and actually keeps time. Well, that blesses me, man. I remember back in the day, that's kind of how it started with us. Like somebody beatboxing, we'd be in a circle, like, and just going off, and we'd take turns. And those are some of my favorite memories, like, even of me falling in love with. I mean, I was in love with hip hop already, but like actually rapping.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, some cool stuff.
Is that one friend who, like, can't stay on the beat? They're over here like,
yeah. Yeah. You're like, nope, not you. Don't clap.
I think there's a certain degree of you either have to listen to a lot of music intentionally, like processing how a beat works, or you have to know something about music.
Yeah.
You don't have to know a ton about music theory, I don't think, but unless you know like what, or at least can feel like what makes a beat satisfying.
You can feel a 4/4.
Yeah. And that's interesting, yeah, because you can learn it. I've seen people who have no rhythm learn rhythm, but then there's some people that just, you know, they just have it. You know, I don't know. That'd be another conversation that's interesting, but I know we were talking about, you know, African people. I don't think they ever need to learn rhythm, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're born, like, you know, they're born feeling rhythm and groove.
Are we talking African people or African American people?
Both.
Yeah. Is it? Do you think it's a gene thing?
I don't know. I'm just saying that not always, but with African people, definitely.
You feel it in their genes?
I mean, there's something about, like, you know, 9 out of 10 people are going to get down, you know what I'm saying?
Like, I think it's more of a cultural thing.
I don't know how easy, I don't know how deep down this road we want to go, but I don't know how you would even quantify like a gene, like musical knowledge being passed down by genes. But culturally speaking, I think you could make that argument because that's something that very organically is transferred from generation to generation. And just like, you know, the importance of music in general is something that can be transferred.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Do you guys want some water?
I'd take some water.
Yeah, I'd take one too.
Yeah, I think that's what I was thinking. Well, I didn't even think about genealogy really when he said it out loud. But even that, it's just embedded. It's just embedded, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I know church culture there's always tons of people who sing if they're in church culture. Because like I was saying earlier, whether you can sing or not, they're going to make you sing in front of everyone. So you're going to try and get better at it. So,
yeah.
And who knows? I mean, like, even if there's people who sing, maybe you develop better, like, music skills if your mom sang to you when you were a baby, you know, stuff like that. Like, so, like, if it's in the culture, it's in the culture.
Right.
I know Samoan people are, like, everyone can sing, and we all end up growing up singing in church because, like, Samoan culture is typically very religious.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we always, almost everyone can sing. And if they're not, it's, like, the really good singers, they get up and grab the mic, and then everyone else is pretty much okay, but still good, and they just sing along.
Yeah.
So when you say really religious, do you mean purely in terms of Christianity, or do you mean like just in general, they have like a very religious mindset? Like, what do you mean by that?
Yeah. So, very, very Christian mindset. There's a pretty large Mormon population.
Oh.
And I don't know as much about this one. But I'm pretty sure on, like, the island itself, there's a decent Catholic influence there.
Sure.
Just for lack of knowledge, I can't speak a whole lot about it. I have met some Jewish Samoans, which I had never met until this year. And they're from Hawaii. So
interesting.
I don't know if that's, like, more of a Hawaii thing, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. But, like, you can tell kind of when people are from... like, different islands, like, because, like, I was talking to some of my boys from Hawaii, and they were saying, like, you can tell, like, when a kid's Samoan, because, like, Samoa itself is, like, a lot more religious, I guess, is, like, how we kind of understand it, is, like, they're more, like, formal and religious, typically, than a lot of the people in Hawaii, so then they'll say, like, you can tell when someone's Samoan, because they'll be, like, doing tons of chores, you know, they'll be, like, more quiet. They'll be doing stuff like mowing the lawn with a machete.
That sounds pretty awesome. Just, I'm not going to lie.
It's just like the way, you know.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Just to go back on kind of where we were at with cultural or where, you know, that comes from. But we talked about this before. But it seems to me like all kids dance and sing from an early age. Every little kid I've ever met, like when they're really young, they dance, they sing, they're really about music. And so you know that it's in the heart, you know, it's in the heart, I think, of every person from the get-go. Like, some of it's just like how it's nurtured along the way.
I think that's true, because you're right. Like, I think about, like, little kids, like, and then kind of, like, depending on the culture, like, does it get, like, do they, like, push it to grow, or do they kind of just, you know, like, socially?
Yeah, my baby's, man, at 6 months old, I'll be listening, turn on the beat, and 6 months old, like, on time.
Yeah, you feel it.
And I'm like, ooh, and especially, like, when they give you the dirty diaper look, you know, that, and you're like, oh, you feeling that, son?
No, my God, it's dirty diaper.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's a little inside look into me jamming out with my babies.
With your babies?
I do jam out to my babies. And then the toddlers and my older kids will all be dance battling and stuff. It's really fun.
It's dope.
Yeah.
They break dance, or?
Yeah, they attempt to. You know, they definitely break stuff when they dance, so.
So, you're working on a new project. Do you want to go into that a little bit?
Yeah, so with this new project, I've shared some with Stevie. But,
super excited about it, man.
Yeah, so basically, I'll rewind a little bit. The past month or two has been the hardest in my entire life that I've ever gone through. And I've been through stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I've been through loss. I've lost family members. I've lost friends for different reasons. I even went through the loss of my dad for a while. But the past 2 months has been even darker, you know. And I'm not going to get into the details, not today, but very, very dark, very sad time, very lonely feeling. I guess I, and it's kind of a like reoccurring thing in my life where I lose sight of God and I shove something else there, something that's like, something that's more tangible, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a problem I've always had, you know? I've always struggled with this voice in the back of my head telling me, you're not good enough, they're better than you, you're worthless, you know, that kind of deal.
Yeah.
Insecurity, you know, it's always been my biggest battle. Growing up, I filled the insecurity with, I never filled it with things that didn't look good. You know, some people turn to drinking, some people turn to pills, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then, like, when that happens, people, like, be like, okay, you got to stop. There's, like, rehab for that. And, like you're losing weight. It's physically unhealthy. It doesn't look good, you know.
It's obvious to people yeah. on the outside that mm-hmm. something's wrong.
Yeah. But yeah. for me, I kind of filled it with things that were viewed as good, you know. In the beginning, it was sports. I was all about my sports. I trained my butt off, you know, and I put my entire identity into sports. It was where I felt like the playing field was even as far as, honestly, in a lot of ways, as far as being, like, one of the few students of color around my school, you know, where I always felt different, you know, where I always didn't understand, like, the way they thought. I didn't understand what their money was like. I was, like, on the football field, like, finally, like, we're even now. Like, the playing field is level, and I can do something for myself here. And in all honesty, sports became an idol for me. It became something that I put above God and above anything. And I mean, I don't even need to say more about that. It's obviously that's not going to work out, you know? Yeah. went through injuries that really, really took away all that. I had a super bad foot injury, and a really bad shoulder injury. That stuff kind of had to fade away, you know, and it was hard for a long time, but I accepted it, you know. I went through that, and I was with God, and I was with God for a while, but it didn't take me long to slowly forget and put something back in the way, you know. So, and of course, like, no, it's not like, it's not, it doesn't look bad. People are saying, oh, he works hard, he's an athlete, you know, he's doing what he needs to. After that, it became leadership. I became involved with the leadership class in my school for 2 years. I was in National Honor Society. I was a link crew member. I was the ASB president at our school, team captain of the football team, the wrestling team, and the track team. Track team 2 years. Was on the news constantly. All this stuff that, like, again, was seen as good. It's like, oh, he's being a leader in his community. I was organizing fundraisers. And while I will say a lot of it was good, you know, a lot of it, I'd say probably like the serving. The serving was just things that really made me happy in it, and that was good. But a lot of it was to, like, sit there and think, oh, you're good enough, you know. You're on the news. They love you. You're the captain. These people have these good things to say about you. The whole school loves you, and so does the administration. And I think I put that above God again. And, again, it failed me, you know. A lot of weird stuff happened at the end of the year. I didn't get recognized for anything. I didn't get a bunch of awards that I very much felt like I deserved. Pretty much a lot of the, like, surface level things that you know, because I was getting heated, like, I wasn't talking about it chill, I was getting mad and, like, stuff, and I was, screw everybody, this school sucks, I've been doing this thing for this whole year for all you people, no one's grateful, didn't mean anything to anyone. I'm putting my neck on the line for no reason. And my mom was telling me, she's like, why did you do it? You know, did you do it to get recognized for those awards? Because if you did, no wonder you're not happy, because you're chasing something that's fake. You know, you want these people's recognition. Why does that mean anything? You know what you did. You know, you want this audience. What about the audience of one? God knows what you did. God knows you helped those people. God knows you showed love to the weird kid who had no one to sit with him. God knows you sat there and, like, mentored the freshmen and the younger people throughout the sports. God knows that you're the only friend that special needs student has, you know?
Yeah.
And that changed it. And, again, it hurt, but I went back to God. And I, And I slowly forgot again. By the time I was in college, I was living my own life, you know, making bad decisions. I mean, I never quit believing in God in college. I never did like crazy stuff. I never, like, if anyone asked, oh, like, what do you believe in God? I'd be like, of course I do, you know, after everything I've seen, you know?
Yeah.
After the thing with my dad, like, I definitely, no, like, of course, but my actions weren't showing that, you know? If someone saw from the outside, like, it's sad for me to say this, but I'm sure, like, if they were looking in from the outside, tons of people probably wouldn't even know that I had, like, any influence of Christ,
mm-hmm.
you know? And all these times, God would let me get hurt, and I would remember it, and then forget and go back, and then he'd let me get hurt to teach me something, and then I would go back. I'd put my heart and my soul into these things that don't matter, these things that aren't God, and they became idols, and they failed me. And I did it again.
Yeah.
I did it again, and I did it with a girlfriend, a woman. I basically, you know, I didn't know all this during the time, or maybe I didn't even want to admit it to myself, but, like, looking back, I know that it's all been running. It's been running from that voice in the back of my head saying, you're not good enough, you know? I always shove something in there to shut it up.
Mm-hmm.
I need success. I need sports, leadership, a girl who makes me feel good, you know?
Yeah.
And every time, they shut it up at first, you know? But then it comes back, so I need them to shut it up more. And more, and then I want more and more and more.
Yeah.
And then it's the same thing with the sports. I just want to be better and better and better. Leadership, I wanted more and more fame, you know? And with the girl, it became a very codependent, unhealthy relationship. And whether I would have made it to myself back then or not, like, in all honesty, I put her above everything. I put her above my family. I put her above myself, for sure. And I put her ultimately above God in my heart. And that's, I'd never say it out loud, but if I look back on it, being honest, that happened. And she failed me.
Mm-hmm.
She failed me.
Yeah.
And it was very painful. The worst thing I've ever gone through. The pain's been really real and like lasting a long time. I've had issues sleeping, you know, I stay up like 5 o'clock every night.
Yeah.
Just pain, you know, just pain. But in this dark place is where I've, like, finally found God again. And because I'm so stubborn, you know, I turned to God, and it was like, yes, you need this. And there'd be nights when I'd be, like, I turned back to God, and I'm like, we're here again. I'm coming back to you. I know I messed up. You warned me the whole time. It's not like God saw what was going on all those times and was like, oh, Malachi's got an idol, like, lightning bolt, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't like that. It was more like, while I was, like, chasing those idols, God was warning me in different ways. And I remember feeling convicted and ignoring it. God was warning me in different ways. Don't do that. Don't do that. And it wasn't even out of a selfish way from God. It wasn't saying, don't do that. You better be with me instead. It was like a, don't do that. That's going to fail. You're going to get hurt. It's like a father and a son, you know? He sees his kid playing, like, with fire. He tells him, you're going to get burnt.
Yeah.
But me as the son, I don't want to listen. I'm going to play with this fire. I like this fire.
Fire's fun.
This fire's fun, you know?
It makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me feel like,
next thing, I'm burnt, and I'm running back to Dad. Why'd you let this happen?
yeah.
Kind of thing, you know? And I don't know. I'm just feeling the pain for so long. I'd lay there at night and be like, God, why am I still going through this? I'm doing the thing. I'm doing the God thing now. I'm doing this with us. Why do I still feel this pain? And God pretty much was like, well, you felt pain before. I know you have. You know you have. And for a while, you remembered it until you forgot.
Yeah.
And then I put you through more stuff, and you remembered it until you forgot. And this time, I'm not going to let you forget. I'm really not going to let you forget. I tried to warn you. I didn't want it to have to come to this. And it was all true, and, like, God said, like, you're not going to forget this time.
It's like the story of humanity, you know? Like, mm-hmm. if you're reading through the Old Testament, it's like the Israelites constantly is just going through that.
It's the same story.
And, and it's everybody has, like, this void, and we just try to fill it with stuff, you know?
Yep, we try all to fails.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it's, like, I feel like God, he offers the truth of the statement, I love you, you're enough, mm-hmm. all that you need is in me. And then we go on this journey trying, not maybe our goal isn't to prove him wrong, but we go on this journey trying to get what he says other ways, yeah. only for every situation to prove him right.
Yeah.
Right? Seriously. They were running back. I should have just listened to you the first time. I know. Yeah. But I'm here.
But you can come back again every time.
Yeah. Or you can think, oh, he's building another golden calf out of some different material other than gold.
The whole humanity thing.
Yeah.
The whole humanity thing.
Yeah.
It really humbled me because, like, my whole life and the people in my youth group could definitely, like, confirm that this always happened. Anytime we'd learn about, like, Adam and Eve, I'd be like, I'll be honest, guys, I wouldn't take the apple. It's like the definition of you had one job.
Yeah, yeah.
You can do anything in the world, just don't touch that apple. Mm-hmm, is what God said, and they did it. And I'm sitting here saying, I wouldn't have touched it. That was like always my thing. I'd have been like, why do we have to pay for that?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, low key, if you weigh it out, apple doesn't seem that great. You got the whole rest of the world. Exactly. I feel like I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, but, Lord, you should have made me Adam. Then this whole thing wouldn't have happened.
Pretty much. It's like the kind of mindset going through middle school and high school in Malachi's brain. But through this experience, I realized, no, I would have taken the apple because in my life I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Multiple we all times.
Do. Yeah.
Multiple times.
Yeah, we all do.
The apple looks good.
Yeah.
It looks good. God's telling you it ain't good, but it looks good, and it looks like it's going to taste good.
Yeah.
So I reached out every time and put... Not only I grabbed the apple, but I put my whole life into this apple, you know? I put my worth, my own being into this apple. This is what's going to make everything okay. This is my purpose, is for this apple. And the apple rots, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't, it's the problem, and that kind of gets to where this project is going. I was actually, so during one of these late nights, when I, like, sleep insomnia pretty much, melatonin and all that wouldn't work, but during one of these late nights, I'd throw on my beats and just walk, you know, listen to worship music, try to get in the right mindset, because at this point, I'm so broken. I'm like, I've got nowhere to be but in God's hands, you know. God let it get so dark. God had to let the room get dark, very dark, for me to finally look at the light that had been shining on me, you know. So I was stubborn. God didn't want it to go that far, but I had to because I wouldn't listen, you know. But I started listening, you know, and I'm trying to be on the right track, but I'm still in a lot of pain, you know, even today. Like, I'm not over it yet. I'm getting there. You know, I'm trying, but I'm not there yet. But I walk around a lot at night, and I started listening to – I just looked up sermon because I didn't know until I was on Spotify. I just looked up sermon, and the first thing that popped up – was this like series by Chip Ingram, and it was called Real Love. And I was like, wow, because I just went through this huge, horrible breakup that I'm still thinking about, and I feel like my life is ruined. I can't even focus on anything. I'm living and suffering every day over love.
Yeah.
So I'm okay. I'll check this out. It was the first thing that popped up. And the very first sermon in the series was called The Four Kinds of Love. And Chip Ingram, obviously, he's an amazing speaker, amazing pastor. He's kind of like talking about blah, blah, blah. Like, think back to times like when you had love, you know. Of course, I was thinking about the most present one, you know, love with my ex-girlfriend. And he started talking about how in English there's the word love. There's only one word for the word love. It's love.
Yeah.
And he said it's weird because you can say, I love my mother, and think about like, your love that you'd have for your own mother, but you can also say, I love pizza. And it's like, how are those the same word in our language?
Because
they mean drastically different things. Yeah. And he talked about old Greek, how they have like a bunch of different words. They have like four different words. There's the four different kinds of love. There's brotherly love, family love, sexual love, you know, passionate love. And then I forget all the names, all the Greek names for them.
Yeah.
But the one that really matters is called agape. And that's like God's love, God's unconditional love, the love that you can never get more of and you can never get less of. And how you're not just loved like for who you are, your love for whose you are. You love, you're loved by God because you are, you know? And I'm sitting there. This was before I even told my parents about everything that was going down, you know, because I didn't want it to hurt them. So I kept it to myself. I'm completely alone in life. My girl that I put here as a god, she was my golden calf, failed. I couldn't go to my family. I hated myself. I was in pain. But God was still there with me. And like in that place when there was nothing else to distract me, I truly believed that I had agape. I had God's love because I could still feel it, you know? Whereas when I had other stuff in the way, I tended to not really notice, you know?
Yeah.
Because I know I had God's love the whole time, but I kind of, yeah, I don't need that, you know? But like being in this dark place when I truly had nothing, rock bottom, where honestly, because of the actions that I chose, you know, I put myself there. And if it comes down to what I deserved to die there, you know?
Yeah.
But because of agape and because of what Christ did for us, I got to come back, you know? And I don't think of it as me coming back. I think of it as I died and God's brought me back new. I'm made new. That's a victory. That's a blessing, you know? And I have agape now. And now I'm willing to, like, focus on that agape, you know, because I know more than anything that's what's true. I mean, I know there's going to be hard times in my life again. Like, that's a given, you know. I really don't think there'll be a harder time because I'm never going to fill the space where, like, I'm never going to fill the space with anything but God.
Mm.
So I know I'll never get let down this hard again. I mean, because, yeah, in all honesty, that's why it was the worst thing in my life, because of how high I pushed my relationship with my girlfriend. Yeah, I mean, feels more like a divorce than, like, than because people say, oh, he's sad about his girlfriend. Or, like, people are like, why is he acting crazy? Because there were some crazy nights, a lot of anger and a lot of unhealthiness went into all this. Yeah. People are like, it's, like, just your girlfriend, you know? People I've talked to about it, like, would even say, like, oh, like, I lost my best friend, blah, blah, blah. Like, this and that happened. And I'd be like, guess what? Me too. And this still hurt worse.
Yeah.
You know? And that's my fault because I put her so high up here above anything that, like, that's why that hurt so bad. I put her, all I know is I believe that I will never get hurt that bad again because I'm never going to put anything or anyone in that place. Mm-hmm. I'm only going to put God there. And I know that as long as God's there, won't fail. Because God will never leave you or forsake you. And that idea of putting agape right up in that, like, that pedestal is what I'm all about now, you know? And that goes into this project. I'm titling the project. I don't know if it's going to be, like, an album or, like, an EP yet. Me and Stevie are going to work out the details.
Awesome.
But I'm calling it agape, you know? Because that's what my life is about right now. That's what I learned in this season and the songs that I'm putting into it. They're going to reflect this season, you know? And if I can think of one word to describe this whole season in my life, it would be agape. Mm. Maybe a close second would be learning the hard way.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah, agape has a nicer ring to it.
Yeah, it's true.
But yeah.
Maybe learning the hard way is a track on the project. You never know.
Well, I mean, I've already wrote some lyrics. A lot of them kind of reflect the idea of learning the hard way. But learning, you know.
Yeah.
Keyword learning.
Right.
The hardest way. Yeah. But yeah.
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 So. Wow. That's deep, man. A lot of deep stuff. Yeah, I was reminded of something while you're talking, but it kind of left me. With my wife, I can relate to a lot of what you're saying. A lot of area in my relationship with my wife, even before she was my wife, she also got put in that place. And I felt okay with me because of her and the approval I got from her. So interesting enough. There was a time in my life where God, before we got married, that God drew a line and called me to make a choice, and I chose him in that moment. But interesting enough, within our first couple years of marriage, what happened to me happened while I was married. Right? So I was already married to the woman, and the Lord was having to teach me how to strip myself away from her. Like, my emotions could not be led by how she felt about me, right? Because there's decisions that you have to make as a man and the head of your household that your wife might not like in the moment, or she's scared, or, you know what I mean? That's part about, like, being an anchor. And if you're dealing with her approval of you, you can't operate as that person, you know? So I kind of say that in double reasoning, just to kind of tell you the story, and then I, you know, can understand to a level of that, what that feels like. And two, like, think about, it could have been worse, you know, because when you're married and there's kids, and that struggle is maybe not more painful, but, like, the result of who that affects, you know. So, it's just crazy to hear and think about even going through that in my own life. But
you did it, though.
Yeah, I did, yep.
And that's like a huge testimony. Mm-hmm. I know in my relationship I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
A lot of the same kind of things, same kind of words coming from God, and I couldn't do it. Yeah. God had to take it.
Yeah. Well, and that was before we got married, that was the choice that he gave me, you know. And I told you a little bit about that story, but yeah. I did. I said, Lord, you know, I choose you, but I can't break up with the girl. So if you want this to end, you're going to have to, like, send angels down to tell her, or, you know, have a friend, like, you know, say, oh, hey, dude's talking behind your back. You know, that's not the way I would want to pick it, but, you know, something, Lord, but it's got to be you.
Just a holy postcard falls from this guy.
Yeah. Well, first of all, have you guys read Chronicles of Narnia?
No, seen the movie.
Okay, Voyage of the Dawn Treader. Don't know if this is in the movie, but in the book, there's a scene where I want to say his name's Eustace. He gets turned into a dragon at some point in the story. It's been a long time, so I don't remember the details. But he gets turned into a dragon, and he does not want to be a dragon. And so there's a scene. It's one of the most powerful moments I think in the whole series. But there's a scene where he meets Aslan, and Aslan is telling him, like, you need to not be a dragon anymore. You need to strip everything away. And he takes it very literally, and he starts, like, clawing all of the scales off of his body. And blood is everywhere. Oh, wow. And he's like, because he so desperately wants to be a human again. And I think that's, in a lot of ways, it's a parable of, like, of us as humans. It's like we put ourselves through all of this pain to try to achieve, I don't know, to fill that void, you could say. And it's almost all unnecessary, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like we're not understanding what is required. And, yeah. But that's, to me, it's like such a powerful image of mankind's, I don't know.
Yeah.
Stubbornness.
And we deal with greed. We deal with so much greed, and I don't know if we always recognize it, but it's like, you know, when you're doing well, you're like, man, I want more, you know?
Facts.
And so, like, I know for me, even listening to you talk, like, my relationship with God, that love, that agape, I mean, that's the thing that brought me, that's the thing that made me realize, like, oh, my God, that's what turned God from a story in a book to a living, breathing being for me, right? That was what shifted it. When I felt that pure love, I was like, oh, my God, this is not about a carpenter man from a book that, you know, like, whoa, you're here. This is real. You know, you're alive. But so agape is like, it's the most powerful thing I've ever felt in my life.
Right.
And I was a meth addict for years. Crack cocaine, ecstasy, LSD, mushrooms, I mean, all of it, heavy. So that should say something. And I had some crazy nights with hallucinogenic drugs that were way beyond what I should have been taking. Well, not like you should have been taking any. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
there's a limit to what you can
I
take.
I hit places that I didn't know I'd ever come back from. You know? And still to this day, I can say that like the love of God is the most powerful thing I've ever felt.
Yeah.
But still in my life, it's been a reoccurring thing. Like, I hit these high points, and I want more. And I don't see it that way in the moment, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And then pretty soon, the more fails me, but I walked away from the thing that sustains me anyway, and then I got to come back to what actually gives me life and makes me feel okay, you know? And so I think, for me, like in my life now, I've recognized that's going to be a continual process. Now, I don't have to keep on, you know, going after more, but it's kind of like you were saying, a father and a son. Like, I think my son and my children, and hopefully I give them a lot of wisdom and words, and they bank on them, but they're going to continually in their life have situations come that they're going to have to choose to remember and decide to live out of that truth, right, for their whole life. You know, and so even if they do in one, it's like it's these series of battles that we go through. And I think, you know, we got to continually remember. And that's the John 15 piece when it talks about abide in me, right? So when we step out of that abiding place of Christ, like, it's coming back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Coming back. And so I think it's important for us to recognize, too, like, it's not something you're going to come back to and live in and never stray from unless you're adamant about remembering, you know, and watching, just watching your life. And, you know, because, I mean, the disciples, day and night with Jesus for 3 years, and they quickly forgot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
And again, got stripped and all these things.
I think typically, like, humans, like, for a lot of people, they can see, like, God can do great things for them. And that's what it's going to take for them to remember.
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot of people, including me,
the stubborn
God
ones.
Had to let evil take some control. God had to let hardships.
Yeah.
If I wish I would have, because I did see miracles.
Right.
All the time, you know.
Yeah.
My dad died and came back to life, like right in front of my eyes. I still didn't have it together.
Yeah.
You know, God tried doing miracles to get me to like shape up and be like, I'm the real deal, but I really wouldn't listen until literally everything was stripped away.
Well, and I think that you said something super vital when you were talking before, that another piece of that is you could have chose, and this isn't like, oh, condemn Malachi, because we all agree we've done this, right, and do this still sometimes. You could have chose to trust that which you'd known the whole time.
Yeah.
And part of not trusting produced this weight in your life, right? These things failing you. Like, no matter what, like, I don't care if it's Mother Teresa. You know what I'm saying? The best person in this world is going to fail you eventually.
Yep.
You know, the nicest car. Like, there's no other thing in this world that's always going to be there for you when you know, when you want it to be, how you want it to be. And even with God, he'll always be there for you, but he doesn't always come with what you thought you wanted or needed, but he knows what we need beyond, you know. But just seeing, like, I don't think the Lord sets up these situations and he's like, oh, that sucks, right? That hurts. Like, but we walk into the pain, and he's like, I am going to make sure that it doesn't work. Because he knows the truth, and it's the lure back, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like that prodigal son. Like, the father knows, you know, Vegas. Your trip to Vegas is not going to work out, you know. You living and wiling with, you know, prostitutes or whatever you're doing down there, that's not going to work out. And eventually, like, you're going to remember your father's house and you're going to come back, you know. And he's there through it all, but, you know, it's, I feel like the dark part and the heavy part is our is our decision to make, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, it's a really complex situation. Like, like, it is shocking how bad I ignored conviction. like I would like feel, I would almost audibly feel God's voice saying, don't do it. Don't do it. You're going to regret it. And I definitely believed in God. Right. It wasn't like I was like, nah, forget it. You don't know me. I'm like, no, God does know me. And I would like basically convince myself, okay, it'll probably be bad. It'll be bad. But I guess I didn't believe it would be as bad as it turned out.
Right.
Like I would even, it would get to the point where I would even like convince myself, yeah, it'll be bad. It just won't be that bad.
Right.
It'd be worth it.
Yeah.
Even though I like literally was being told, it's not going to be worth it. You're going to regret it. I'd be like, maybe I will regret this, but maybe just a little bit.
Right.
Like I would get to that point of me like ignoring conviction to the like to the point where I knew the truth and still chose the apple.
Yeah.
The dumbest thing you could do is, you know.
Yeah.
The thing you were literally warned against and I believed it to be true. I just
So slight little shifts in direction over time that get you so off course. You know? It's like that slow fade I call it. But yeah. So I'm super excited because so Malachi was here. We were talking about him being on the podcast last week, and you got to share a lot of this with me then.
Yeah.
And so ever since then, I've been excited for you to come on the podcast and excited about this project, you know, because it's obviously been a very deep, you can feel, you know what I mean, the depth on what you've been going through, what you're still going through, and music coming out of that place, you being so in touch with what's going on inside your soul, inside your heart, and music coming out of that place, it's going to be fire. You know, I'm excited for you to get some of that stuff out for your own self, but also for other people to, you know, be impacted by what comes out of that. So, yeah, man, really excited. Do you have any timelines or thoughts on, like, maybe when we can see a single or, I mean, and no pressure, but I'm just curious if you had some things you were...
I should do that, shouldn't I? Like, put out one, like, before the official drop, you think?
I mean, could be good. I think that's all in your, you know, your, what you want to do promotionally. Yeah. But I know that for people watching, you know, be on the lookout. Be on the lookout. But, yeah.
Yeah, man, I think I'll do that. I think I'll throw one out there before... I don't. It really comes down to just time and money.
Yeah.
And people, because I got, like, I got my schedule, you got your schedule.
Right.
Definitely featuring a lot of people on this.
Yeah.
They got their schedule.
Right.
Yeah, time is just, it's fun. That, I mean, that's why I've only put out one song this whole year, is because it takes, like, music just takes a lot of time and money.
Yeah.
And college takes a lot of time and money. So it's like constant battle.
Yeah.
And it's like I'm trying my best to find the balance. And I mean, on top of that, like when I had a girlfriend, she got all the time.
Yeah.
And not even because of her, because of me.
Yeah. Right.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're full time at Whitworth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Shout out to Whitworth.
Yeah. Witty witty is what we call it.
Okay. So, you want to throw out some of your social media stuff so people can find you?
So I'm on IG, Malachi Arreta 75. That's MALAKAI_AREETA with a 75 at the end. I got bars on there. You can peep those. Snapchat, I'm always giving out updates and stuff. That's MALACHI_AREETA. I got Facebook. It's just my name. I mean, if you want to slide through on Facebook and say something, that's cool. YouTube. I got all my songs on YouTube. It's Malachi Music, MALAKI, and then Music. Probably just search up my name. It's spelled two different ways. Either one. If you put AREETA, all right, it's at the end. Some will pop up. It might be a new segment or music video. Am I missing anything? Oh, yeah, Spotify and Apple Music and iTunes. I'm on there, too.
Nice.
Again, MALAKAI AREETA. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because last time I went, I think I even posted your song.
Oh, really?
I posted one of your songs on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
And I spelt your name, like, the regular way. And then
wait, which way is the regular way for you?
The way you spell it for real in real life is M-A-L-A-C-H-I, right?
Okay, well, it depends. It depends on who I'm writing it for and, like, okay.
Like official, your birth certificate.
My birth certificate is, like, the English spelling of Malachi. Mm-hmm. And then the Samoan version of spelling it, like, in the Samoan Bible is M-A-L-A-K-I. Mm. But that's, like, I was getting sick of being called Malachi my whole life, so... So, like, I kind of, like...
That seems like a
typically,
weird...
Typically, if it's, like, typically, if I'm writing my name for, like white people, I'll spell it the Samoan way, because it's weird, because, like, the English way is harder for, like, English speakers to read, mm-hmm. whereas, like, that one's more, like, phonetically, it makes more sense, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah,
and they'll definitely. Be, like, Malachi, instead of, oh, is Malachi in class today? Malachi Arita, are you here? And I'm like, ah. Oh. Yes, it's Malachi.
Oh my gosh. Butchered my name.
Yeah, so I kind of like did them both. Yeah, so it is kind of confusing. Different things have different, like, yeah. But yeah.
Awesome. All right, well, we have to have you back, like, when the project's closer to getting finished.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. All right, awesome. You can find us, Sound Mind Podcast, everywhere, because we're that cool. And we're at Skytree Studios, and Justin is not doing the finger thing, but something much worse. So, till next time.